Steuerung Alt entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge Steuerung Alt entfernen mit mir, Linda von Rennings, und einem Vortrag von GitHub-Gründer Scott Chacone, den er auf der Hub Berlin zum Thema Kundenservice gehalten hat. Als Co-Founder von GitHub hat Scott einen wesentlichen Beitrag dazu geleistet, aus der Idee von ein paar Freunden eine der bedeutendsten Plattformen für Softwareentwickler werden zu lassen. Welche Rolle dabei der Kundenservice spielt, warum man nie Do-Not-Reply-E-Mails verschicken sollte und wieso man das eigene Produkt unbedingt selbst nutzen sollte, verrät er in seinem Vortrag, den er auf Englisch gehalten hat. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Hello everybody, thank you so much for having me today. It's been a great conference and I realize I'm one of the last people here holding you back from beer soon, so I'll try to make this as quick as possible. So, my name is Scott Chacone. I was at GitHub. I was a co-founder of GitHub, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about what that was and what I'm going to talk about today. So, I started at GitHub with a handful of friends of mine when there were four of us all together, and I was there for 8 years and grew the company two orders of magnitude to about 450 people-ish before I left. And I learned a lot of things in GitHub that when I went to start my own new company, I've started to apply, and so they asked me to kind of talk about a couple of things. And the thing I want to talk about today, there's a lot of different things we could talk about. The thing I want to talk about today is the thing that I think everybody knows Germans are best at, which is customer service. So I want to talk about the really interesting things about customer service and about that I learned at GitHub that I would apply to anything. So these are some of the things that I did at GitHub, working at a startup, growing a startup from almost nobody to you know, a medium-sized, large business. You end up doing just about everything. And customer service was one of the things that affected all of these different areas. And so I don't want this to be about what you should do. I don't particularly like talks like that. I want this to be about what I would do in any company that I do moving forward and why I think it's valuable. All right. So the things I want to talk about today are using your own product, right? Not everybody does this. I think that it's something that everybody that's a founder, everybody that's a CEO should take very seriously about learning what the product is like, listening to your customers when your customer is somebody other than yourself as well, to really get an idea of what the frustrations of your users are, and augmenting people over replacing them. So I'll start first about using your own product. So in America, we call this dog fooding. I don't know if you guys have the same phrase. And if so, I don't know what the gender of the phrase is in German. D-dog fooding, maybe. And it means using your own product. And I find this to be one of the most valuable things, that I would never start a company that I wouldn't want to use my own product every day. So I still, to this day, I haven't worked at GitHub in 2 years, and I still use GitHub every day, just about every day, and I have for about 10 years now. It's an incredibly valuable part of the ecosystem of what I do all of the time, and I feel like it's really important as an owner of a company to try to be as deeply committed to the thing that you're making as possible, which includes using your own product as a customer if possible. One of the interesting stories that I always found really valuable is Airbnb. How many of you are staying at Airbnbs while here in Berlin? Anybody? Handful of people. So I'm in an Airbnb now. I've stayed in probably hundreds of them. I travel a lot. And one of the things that always struck me was that the co-founder or the founder of Airbnb stayed in his own Airbnbs, lived out of Airbnbs for several months at the beginning of his company, which I think gave him great insight into what it's like to be a customer for his company, what it's like to be a host for his company. He still rents out. Even today, you can go stay in his house in San Francisco through Airbnb. So he's still a host in the system. And I think that learning what it's like to be a customer or to be a part of the ecosystem of the company that you're in is one of the most important things you can do to learn what is right and what is wrong with your own product. And I think most industries would really take a lot of value from this. And it's really valuable for your business as well, because it tells you on a real visceral level what is frustrating about your own product. I feel like, just to take one example, the taxi industry. I feel like if people that owned taxi fleets in San Francisco or New York had done the same type of experiment and tried to get around town and do all of their transportation only using their own taxis, that Uber would have been less of a threat, because they would have seen all of the real frustrations that there are in using taxis to try to get around everywhere and tried to fix that before Uber came and took it away from them, right? And I think any of these things as well, language learning, I have a language learning startup. I try to use it every day. I use it all the time. I try to learn a language. I think that if you're interested in language learning and you're looking at different apps out there, you should see, are the people that work there learning languages, right? Is the CEO becoming fluent in a new language every 3 or 4 or 5 years? Because if not, that means that they're either not using their own product or they don't really care that much about language learning. And either way, I feel like that's not a valuable thing, or their product doesn't work. Right, so I've been doing this with Chatterbug, just like I use GitHub every day. I've been using my own product every day, and I put together a YouTube thing of me learning German over the last year and a half, from zero, like literally not knowing any words, to B1 German, right? And so you can see what that process looks like. But it's important to me to be able to do that, and I think that it's very valuable for people in other industries to do that as well. The next thing is to listen to your customers. So one of the things you can't do as a founder or a CEO of your company is go through every path that every customer goes through, right? There are hundreds of different paths, hundreds of different types of customers. You can't do all of them. I think it's valuable to do it something yourself, so you have a real visceral connection to your product and understand the shortcomings, but you also want to see what other people are having problems with, what other people are being frustrated with. And the reason why this is really important is because I feel like a lot of companies don't value making feedback easy. Don't value listening to their customers in a way where they try to make it as easy as possible for their customer to vent frustration. So I'll give you an example. I'll pick on Twitter. I'm only picking on companies that I really like and I use a lot, but I'll pick on Twitter. If you have a problem with Twitter, this is very common in a lot of web-based sites. I encourage you to go to your own site and try this, right? Come up with something that you think might have been frustrating, make up something, and see how long it takes you and how much work it takes you to actually submit something to your own company and say, this is a problem or this is a frustration that I'm having. So this is very common. You find a help link. It takes you to a knowledge base, and it says, please do our work for us, right? Please go through, do the research, figure it out on your own. We really don't want to hear from you unless there's no other way to do it. And so you type in, oh, I'm being harassed, right? And it says, here's a whole bunch of things. Figure out which of these might be kind of close to what you're doing. And then you click on one, and it's like, well, here's essentially a white paper on all of the problems that we've ever heard on this. So we'd like you to read this whole thing and figure out where you fit into this so that we don't have to waste our time on you. And then you find something, and it says, okay, here's a massive form. Please fill out all of these different things so that we don't actually have to read something that you've written to us and figure out how to categorize it. We'd like you to do all of that work for us, and then maybe we'll listen to you. And this is super, super common, right? If you send somebody to a knowledge base first, or you send somebody to say, please do all of the research involved, then you're going to lose a ton of people who are just like, you know what, never mind. I'm not going to do that, right? Chatterbug, we use Intercom. There's a lot of companies that use this. Because I use it as an example because I think it's a really valuable way of doing this. You click on, there's a button on every page, you click on it, you can type in what your problem is. It has a link to a knowledge base if you want to do that, if you'd prefer not to wait for a response or for a human being to look like that. But at least we get them, and we get all sorts of stuff. We get people that just write like Jello and then submit it, and we're like, okay, I don't know what that means or how to help you, but thank you for your feedback. And then we get people that have very long, complicated, you know, problems that we can do, but we get all their frustrations. Another thing I see a lot is no replies. If your company is sending out no reply emails, there's a special place in hell for you, because no reply emails are one of the worst. Thank you. What no reply emails tell me is that your company is totally fine wasting my time by putting something in my inbox for me to filter and read, but they don't want me to do the same for them. Right? So they can do it, waste my time, but please don't waste ours, which I think is really, really rude. And what is worse from that, from a company perspective, is that if it's a no reply, so I have I'm going to pick on Dropbox now. There might be some Dropbox people in the room. Again, I love Dropbox. I use it all the time. I pay for it. But I recently installed Dropbox Paper. This is literally a couple days ago. I had a problem with it, with actually the Dropbox Paper thing crashed on my iPad, and I wanted to tell them about it. And I went, and it's a no reply. I can't reply to this. There's a help link at the bottom. I could click on that. I'd probably have to go through the same type of thing that Twitter sent me through in order to say, your app crashed. That's all I want to do. Your app crashed. This is what I was doing, and it crashed, right? You might want to know about it. And instead, it's not worth it, so I don't tell them. And so they end up not even hearing. They have a frustrated customer, and they have no idea, right? Because it's not worth my time to let them know that there was a problem. I simply just don't use it anymore. So why I think this is really valuable is I think your customers' frustrations are the best defense that you have about from getting disrupted at some point, right? Because if your customers are frustrated, and especially if you don't know about it, then those customers will eventually find somebody else that is not as frustrating, and then you lose, right? And this is what happened to the taxi industry. They didn't care. They thought they were protected by regulation, and somebody figured out how to get around that and solve all of their customer service problems that had been plaguing them forever, but they didn't care because they thought that people didn't have a choice, and now they're in huge, huge trouble, right? And then the final thing that I'd like to talk about that goes down this line is augmenting people over replacing them. So there's some VC guy that I heard say, name a profession, I'll tell you when computers can do it. I think this is a very common theme sort of in the technology industry, is that computers are taking our jobs. This causes a lot of angst, I think. But I don't think that this is true, right? I think that technology, like all technology in history, is going to end up augmenting people so that the things that people do well can be done better and can be done more efficiently, and there can be a combination. Because I don't think the things that computers are good at and the things that people are good at overlap very much. And I think that the things that computers are good at are very easily measurable, and so it's very easy to find value in them. And things that humans are good at are soft skills that are much harder to measure, and computers are horrible at. And so if you can't measure it, it's very hard to tell whether it's valuable or not. And so I think people tend to highly undervalue the skills that humans are good at, in a way that if you're not listening to your customers and if you're not using your own product, you can totally not notice, right, until it's too late, until you've lost customers, until you've lost business. So what I'd rather say is name a profession, and I'll tell you how computers could make humans better at it. I think that's a much more interesting question, right? What are humans good at? Because what humans are good at tends to be what we find really interesting and really valuable. And I think technology can augment that in a more interesting way than replacing it. So I'm going to tell you two different stories that go along these lines. One, I came here from San Francisco. I live in San Francisco most of the time, and I live in Berlin about a week a month or so, so I do this trip a lot. And I'm going to tell you a story about my recent adventure at Newark Airport. So Newark Airport is in sort of the New York area. It's very confusing that they named them so similarly, but of the United States. And they recently went through their terminal, and everywhere that you could get food or drink, they replaced the interface between you and the person serving you food with an iPad. And these are all over the terminal. It's really interesting if you've ever been in Newark Airport. It's super confusing. So what happened is I went to this exact bar, which is an amazing bar, by the way, and tried to order a beer. And what should have happened is I could have sat down. There's a person standing right behind that. I could have said, hey, can I have a beer? And they say, sure, here's a beer. And I go, thanks, here's $5. And that's it, right? I get my beer. I know what's happening the whole time. Instead, what happened is I have to use these iPads. So I have to go through a whole menu, right? I can just say, hey, I want a beer. Like, that's very easy to do. Instead, I have to use the limitations of this technology to tell it what I want. And then I finally tell it what I want, and then it has a problem, and it doesn't tell the person behind. So I can see the person not get the message for like 10 minutes. And so I'm sitting there waiting for the beer, and then finally I figure it out. I debug their thing. It goes through. It still takes a while, and then I finally get my beer right as I'm about to leave because I wasn't sure if they even know about it or not, right? And this is a massive failure. And I stood in this terminal for 5 minutes and just listened, and everyone was pissed off. There was no one happy with this system. But I guarantee you that the people that designed the system probably don't stand in this terminal very often and probably, you know, only know the best case scenario of this. And you literally just have to stand there for 5 minutes and listen to what people are doing. And it's incredibly frustrating because there is speed, maybe, if you know how to do it. There's consistency, certainly, generally, but there's no empathy, right? There's no one to listen to you. There's no one, if it goes wrong, there's no way to tell somebody about that and be listened to. And that's very, very important, and I think it's very common as we start trying to remove people from our industries. And I'll tell you another tale to wrap things up, which is the happy tale of the Nutcracker. So about every year, ish, I try to take my family to see the Nutcracker at Christmas time, sort of a family tradition. We've been doing it since my daughter was very young. And the Nutcracker is 125 years old, right? It's a very, very old thing. The music is the same. The story is the same. But this is what it looked like in the 1800s. This is what it looks like today, right? It's the same thing, but it's massively better. right? And most of this has to do with technology, with applying technology to making something that humans are good at and find interesting better. And I find that very compelling. So for everything from costume design to training of the musicians, to training of the dancers, to lighting, to sound, to miking, to theater design, to buying your tickets, selecting seats, all of these things are better than it was in 1892. And you can do this with just about with tons and tons of stuff, especially in performing arts, right? I mean, you can go see Hamlet, and now people are still interested in this. This is a 400-year-old thing, right? And so I don't think, this is my daughter that I took to the Nutcracker in San Francisco, and I don't envision her seeing Robot Nutcracker, right? And so what I'd like you to think about in the, whatever industry you're in is, are you doing Newark Airport or are you doing the Nutcracker, right? Are you trying to take something that is fundamentally interesting and valuable to human beings and has a human component and making it better through technology, or are you removing that unmeasurable thing in order to make more money or to make things more efficient, and in turn losing the love of your customers? So, in a nutshell, use your own product if you can. I think it's incredibly valuable for you. I think you should want to. I think you should be passionate about the thing that you're running, the thing that you're doing. Life is too short to not be. Listen to your customers for all of the stories that aren't you, and augment people over replacing them if you can do that. Or, to put it another way, dog food, don't use no replies, and Nutcracker, not Newark. Thank you very much.
Das war der Vortrag von Scott Chacon auf der Hub Berlin. Ich hoffe, ihr habt ein paar Tipps zum Thema Kundenservice mitgenommen und hört auch beim nächsten Mal wieder rein. Den Vortrag als Video findet ihr übrigens auch auf unserem YouTube-Kanal und den Link dazu findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes. Ich sage Tschüss und bis zum nächsten Mal bei Steuerung Alt Entfernen.
Das war Steuerung Alt Entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom. Weitere Folgen findet ihr auf www.bitkom.org/podcasts.